are now listening to a podcast made in collaboration with the Copenhagen College Radio.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for tuning in to episode 54 of the Social Media and Politics Podcast, bringing you expert insights into how social media is changing the political game. I'm your host, Michael Pesetta, political scientist at the University of Copenhagen. Remember, you can connect with us on Twitter at SMNP Podcast or swing by our website, socialmediaandpolitics.org. All right, y'all. Thanks again for tuning in. Today, we're going to be talking about a rather old technology, but that is really picking up some steam in terms of how it's being used by political campaigns, particularly ahead of the 2018 U.S. midterm elections. And that is text messaging, a technology that we're all familiar with, but it's a medium that really hasn't been exploited to its full potential by political campaigns. And that's somewhat surprising because 90% of text messages are opened in the first 3 minutes, and 99% actually get read. So that's a much, much higher percentage than people opening emails or reading a message from a politician or organization on social media. Now, those stats come from a post on Medium by Thomas Peters, who is my guest today. And regular listeners of the pod will remember Thomas from episode 43, where we talked about how his company, YouCampaign, was developing apps for center-right politicians, parties, advocacy organizations all across the globe. And at the end of that interview, we were talking about where YouCampaign is going in terms of what new technologies it's looking to develop. And we were talking about a peer-to-peer texting platform called RumbleUp, and lo and behold, 7 months later, here we are, where RumbleUp is in full swing and being used in campaigns across the U.S., from local elections to special elections to, I'm sure, the upcoming midterm elections. So today, Thomas joins us on the pod to talk about P2P texting and the RumbleUp platform, and really, I think this is a super interesting technology. With a lot of the public's focus, and I know from my field in academia, in political communication studies, there's so much focus on how politicians are tweeting or how they're using Facebook. But really, I think that these mobile app technologies that YouCampaign develops, and particularly these type of peer-to-peer texting, are probably more effective in terms of getting out the vote and probably more of an explanatory factor in election outcomes than what politicians are posting on their public Facebook pages. So really, as I said before, I think this is where the real campaigning is happening. I think there's a lot of interest both in the Republican Party and the Democratic Party and parties across the globe into harnessing this technology because there's a number of benefits. As I said, they're opened much more often than emails. They're coming from friends, which is an interesting part we're going to get into, where mass robo-texting is illegal by United States law, but if you harness supporters to text for you as a kind of gatekeeper to their networks, then campaigns can send up to 2,500 text messages every hour. And more than that, these text messaging platforms can be used to do A/B testing. They can be used to conduct polling. They can be used to collect donations. They can be combined with third-party data in order to pre-select the audience that you want to send your text messages to encourage calls to action. You can use regular SMS text messaging. You can use multimedia text messaging to include pictures, videos, other forms of multimedia. So it's a really flexible technology. It's really, I think, the avant-garde of campaigning. And in terms of crafting creative and the actual transmissions of the messages, it's rather cost-effective and can provide a high ROI for campaigns. So Thomas and I, we're going to get into all this stuff. He really knows the ins and outs of this technology. And we're going to talk specifically about his platform, RumbleUp. And I would encourage listeners to go and check out the articles he's been writing on Medium. I'm going to link to the one about RumbleUp in the show notes. But in those posts and also on the RumbleUp and YouCampaign website, there's a ton of case studies that really give you some hard numbers about how effective these technologies are. So without further ado, I'm going to introduce Thomas Peters. He is the founder and CEO of YouCampaign and RumbleUp. Thomas, thanks so much for taking the time out and welcome back to the Social Media and Politics Podcast.
My pleasure.
So I've got a whole series of questions for you about the ins and outs of using text messaging for campaigning, but why don't we first dive right into RumbleUp? Last time we spoke, I think the platform was just getting off the ground. Could you give us a brief intro into RumbleUp and the type of response you've been getting so far?
Yes. So RumbleUp is a peer-to-peer texting platform that we built using our YouCampaign smartphone app technology. So it's primarily an app-based solution where volunteers download an app onto their phone or tablet and then send pre-populated messages one by one via text message to voters around the country.
And, you know, I want to take a bit of a deeper dive into Rumble Up on the back end. And you mentioned in this piece that you wrote on Medium that Rumble Up is an extension of this YouCampaign ecosystem. So could you describe how Rumble Up integrates into that existing infrastructure you've already built?
Sure. Well, first of all, we already have a platform that allows us to quickly produce apps. And that was extremely useful because otherwise it would have taken us probably 9 months to a year to produce all the back-end infrastructure to support an app that's capable of sending hundreds of thousands of text messages a day. So that's one way that we built on what we've already used before. Rumble Up also uses our gamification engine, and that's really helpful when campaigns want to track and see which of their volunteers are sending the most messages, getting the most people to complete whatever call to action they're asking them to do. So that's just two examples. And the third important way is that we are able to reuse and repurpose our backend portal website, where our clients can log in and make changes to their campaigns and pretty much be self-sufficient once we've trained them so they can do it themselves.
Right. And so I was looking a bit at how Rumble Up works. And obviously, when you're dealing with text messages, you need phone numbers. So how would a campaign get these phone numbers? Where might they come from? And, you know, what steps could campaigns take to sort of get lists of cell phone numbers?
There's a variety of sources. Actually, some states ask for your best number when you register to vote, and people will often put their cell phone number there. So that is actually just a public access way in some states that people, campaigns and organizations can acquire these cell phone numbers. But there's also a large number of data vendors. And actually, in the United States, both the Republican and Democrat parties have their own programs to acquire cell phones, just like they do for email addresses, home addresses, digital IDs, basically whatever medium they want to communicate with voters. There's special laws in the United States that allow political parties and organizations to have access to that information.
Uh-huh. And, you know, I've been talking to a few digital campaigners ahead of the midterm elections, and the sense I get is there's an increasing amount of hype around texting as a medium for communication and issuing calls to action. But I was thinking about it, and texting is a pretty old technology, right? It predates social media and lots of other campaign tools. So what's kind of taken so long for campaigns to really adopt this technology?
What was keeping almost everyone back was legal provisions in the United States that prohibit robo or mass texting people without their individual prior opt-in consent. And the kind of workaround that Hustle invented simultaneously with the Bernie Sanders campaign way back in 2015 was the realization that if every text message is sent one-on-one by a human being, that defies the description of what a robotext or automated dialer is. And so just in the same way that for a while now, campaigns can legally call cell phone numbers as long as it's a live person calling that cell phone one by one. That same rule applies to texting. And so for the first time now, campaigns and organizations can legally text recipients that they previously didn't think they could or didn't know how to. And that's what's changed things so much.
Yeah, and that follows well into my next question, which is when we're talking about the type of texting that Rumble Up does, it's peer-to-peer texting, right? And there's, as you mentioned, other kinds like robo-texting and opt-in texting. So could you break down some of those different types of texting and why specifically you're focusing on this P2P texting?
Absolutely. So the traditional method of texting that campaigns and organizations have used is the opt-in method, where people voluntarily give their cell phone and explicitly like check a box with legal language saying that, yes, I allow you to text me. And then in the corporate world, there was even another step where after that next text comes, you had to reply yes to consent to receiving further text messages. So that's the old texting. I call it mass texting because there's no prohibition on using an automated dialer or a mass texting platform to send one message to 1,000, 10,000, a million people at once, as long as they've all opted in. Peer-to-peer is different in that you have to crowdsource it to lots and lots of people using their own human thumbs or clicking a mouse. And so that's where having the app as a distribution vehicle is really helpful, because with peer-to-peer texting and Rumble Up, one person can send 2,500 outbound messages in an hour. So if you have 40 people, you can send 100,000 messages in an hour. And that's the kind of scale that a bigger campaign needs to reach if they're really going to get their message across. So those are the big differences between peer-to-peer. The other thing that's really special about peer-to-peer is that it is real human beings having real conversations. And one of the most fascinating things that I found in kind of reading through the logs and the responses is, first of all, the outbound message is much more personal typically. That's sort of a best practice. So instead of saying, hi there, it's election day, go vote, it's, hi, John, this is Thomas with Rumble Up or whatever the organization's name is. Would you be interested in finding out where the candidates stand on a particular issue? And so it invites people into a conversation, ideally. And the magic happens when the person realizes that this really is another human being on the end of the conversation who wants to talk to them about whatever the issue is.
Gotcha. And just to clarify, because it's a bit confusing, all these different types of texting, it's essentially illegal, or the law is against sending these mass texts, you know, this robo-texting, unless people opt in. And so peer-to-peer texting and what Rumble Up facilitates is actual people as distribution points to send out the text. Is that how it works?
That's right. And then they have to send the messages one by one. And that is the difference. It's incredible. And then what's really incredible is actually the scale that it's already been done. So over 50 million peer-to-peer text messages were sent in the 2016 cycle alone. And it's estimated that between 150 and 200 million could be sent in the 2018 cycle. So it's really exploding.
Hmm. And what type of messages are these text messages sending? Like, how can campaigns use this? I'm assuming calls to action, but, you know, how else can this medium be used?
It's actually extremely flexible. And I kind of compare it to where we are now with peer-to-peer texting is where email was 20 years ago. So people knew that it existed, but people didn't really know how to use it. And so there's a lot of innovation happening right now in discovering what ways it can be used. So at the very beginning, the two primary uses that peer-to-peer texting was used for was getting out the vote reminders. So let's say you have an audience of people that you think if they come out and vote, they will vote for your candidate or your cause, but you're not sure if they're going to. So sending them a text message reminder is the cheapest and most immediate way to get on their radar that it's, you know, you'd like them to come out and vote, because text messages are read at a 99% rate, and 90% of those text messages get opened within 3 minutes. So nothing compares with the visibility of text messaging. The second use that people would use it for is getting people to come out to events. And there's a good article about how Bernie Sanders' campaign used it to organize college students to come out and vote in the Iowa caucuses, which really helped them there. And they use that in the primaries going forward. But what we're seeing, kind of fast forwarding to 2018, is that just like people in real life use text messages to do lots of things, to meet up at events, to transact commercial transactions with their credit card, to confirm whether or not, yes, that was really me, to know about updates and flights, et cetera, peer-to-peer texting can be used for pretty much anything that you want people to do. It can be used, for instance, asking people to watch your ad. So we can use multimedia texts to embed a 30-second high-quality video that when the person plays full screen on their phone, just like a TV ad, but it captures their attention. And it includes a link at the bottom of that message that people can click on to immediately take action. So it activates them much more quickly. Another one of the kind of further use cases that we've extended it to is getting people to call their elected officials. So you can basically provide people with a phone number, which routes them to their whatever elected official that you're hoping they will call. And we can track how long they're on the phone to know that they're actually taking the action. It's really fascinating stuff.
Huh. And you alluded to something I wanted to ask you about, which is, you know, we talked about different methods of text messaging, but there's also different formats, right? There's SMS and then MMS, which is the more multimedia that you alluded to. I mean, are you seeing differences in the effectiveness of SMS versus MMS?
Yes, we're a strong believer in MMS. So that basically, that's short for multimedia, actually MMS. I'm not entirely sure.
Service? Or...
Yeah, probably. I use it every day. It basically means you can attach a piece of media to it. So it's not necessarily a video. It could also be an image or a GIF. And in practice, what that means is it's an icebreaker. If you send a text to someone with just words or maybe some emojis, that's interesting. It could be clever. But once you add a high quality piece of media that's either entertaining or funny or something, it's an icebreaker. And people we found are much more open to receiving the message. Because yes, on the one hand, I didn't ask for this text to show up, but you made me smile, or you made me think, or you educated, or you inspired me. And so now you've got a much more positive interaction happening, ideally.
Right. And I'm curious about the cost of this technology, specifically, you know, compared to other forms of digital or even the other types of services that you provide. Is this a relatively cheap or a relatively expensive way to contact voters?
It's a relatively cheap way. So without revealing anything that's not on our website, you know, the cost to send a plain text is about 9 cents. The cost to send a multimedia text is about 13 cents. And when you compare that with the fact that you have a 99% probability that that will be seen and noticed, that looks very attractive compared to, say, a direct mail piece, which could be a dollar, or, you know, a TV ad, which could be 75 cents. But then is the person actually looking at it? Do they have TiVo? Were they staring, you know, down at their phone when the TV ad was on? So overall, the reason that campaigns are really excited about switching to peer-to-peer is they're finding that they're getting a better return on investment than other channels. The other thing that I have to add is that text messaging is now being layered on tops of those old mediums to provide more lift. So if you're going to put all the effort into making this really nice folder of direct mail that you send to someone, by sending them a text that says, hey, did you get that piece of mail? Or, hey, you should expect this in your mailbox. You've increased the likelihood that someone's actually going to open that piece of mail that you so lovingly assembled. And that's true as well for the medium of TV. Basically sending someone a text message after you think they've seen their TV ad. It also applies to door knocking. Or to saying that you want to call them and survey them about their opinion. People aren't picking up the phone as much as they used to. And then lots of households don't have landlines. So if you are trying to get a live call survey to get a really good national sample by texting someone in advance saying, hey, we're not trying to sell you anything, but we would really value your opinion. And that's what this number is when it's going to call you. We've got case studies showing between a 50 and 60% lift in efficiency using text messages.
That's interesting. And I remember when we were talking about the YouCampaign app platform, we were talking about how users would be sent push notifications to their phone to prompt them for exactly those types of actions, like, hey, we're having a money bomb or something like that. I guess what you're saying is that text messaging can be used in the same way to sort of prime people. And, you know, what's the advantage of the text? Is it that you can go beyond people who are signed up to your existing app? Because to have push notifications, they have to be signed up to the app. But text messaging can kind of reach a broader audience, I'm guessing, as long as you have their cell phone numbers.
Exactly. It's a far, far, far broader audience. The app, we remain building apps. We're actually excited to be launching some major apps in Canada and Australia in a couple weeks for national parties. But that's for your most dedicated supporters. The great thing about text messaging is it allows you to basically increase your range and your audience to create a funnel, hopefully, to identify new people or bring them up the ladder to where they're willing to engage with you at a higher level, which could be, you know, making a donation, signing up to be a volunteer, and yes, downloading one of our wonderful apps.
Exactly. That's what I was thinking. So I want to stick on cost for a second. And in terms of the cost to the campaign, not in sending the actual text, not in terms of the transmission cost, but actually in terms of cost in creative and designing those ads, because, you know, there's a lot of campaigning firms that spend a lot of time crafting digital, a lot of time thinking about what types of advertisements they're going to be putting out on paid media, for example. So would you say that the process of designing a text is less intensive in that way? Like, is there a saving for a smaller campaign? Because I would imagine it's less time intensive in terms of creating creative.
Yes. I mean, nothing in my experience, and this is now 10 plus years in politics, is as fast to set up and get rolling as peer-to-peer texting. We have a completely turnkey platform. So once someone gets approved to create an account, they can be up and running and sending texts in 30 minutes. So it's amazing. And with text messaging, we provide best practices. So when a client comes to us and says, we want people to come out to an event, we can often provide them a variety of templates to choose from, which they can modify slightly themselves. We also provide best practices in terms of like keeping it informal, keeping it relevant, keeping it personal, obviously respecting when people don't receive further messages. And that's something I should say that, you know, peer-to-peer texting opens the door, but it doesn't mean that you have an infinite right to bug someone. And so at any point when we text with people, if someone replies back, stop, or I don't want this, we instantly put them on a do not disturb list, and that client is not allowed to contact them again because it's fruitless, and also it is the law. So those are two things I think that we should have some clarity on. You should be able to opt out of receiving messages from any people that are texting you. And if they keep harassing you, you should report them.
Right. And when I think of texting and look at it in the context of comparing to social media, there's a sort of growing popularity in one-to-one social media messaging apps like WhatsApp or Facebook Direct Messenger. And those have been used by campaigns. You know, we've talked about it on the podcast, particularly in the Netherlands, where campaigns are using WhatsApp lists precisely for these reasons. They're opened more often. They're more personal. They're where people connect with close friends. Is there anything that separates text messaging from those kind of social media one-to-one applications?
Not really in theory. I mean, the peer-to-peer concept absolutely applies as well to WhatsApp, Facebook Messenger, WeChat, Viber, like all these messaging apps that are much more popular outside the United States. And so we're looking at ways to apply the principles of peer-to-peer that we've been using with texting into these other social channels. Because ultimately, like, people are more likely to care about what their friends and what real people think about. There's less trust in institutions, I feel like, than there has been in the last 5 to 10 years. And so the last thing that people will kind of listen to are real people who care passionately about something and want to take the time to explain themselves. So that's what we're enabling, and that's what we're looking at doing on the international scene. The U.S. is a very odd country in the fact that, you know, text messaging is extremely prevalent, and it's relatively spam-free. And so that's what makes peer-to-peer so powerful here in the United States. But it's much less powerful. And for instance, we don't think that it's something that can be done under GDPR in the EU. And so that's where using apps like WhatsApp and Facebook Messenger are what we're looking at doing there.
And I guess to a smaller degree, I'm also trying to think of differences, is that these platforms, particularly WhatsApp, is moving more towards putting ads in people's feeds. So I guess you get an ad-free environment with text messaging.
Correct. Yeah. You know, people are used to talking to other human beings. That's what people love about text messaging. And that's where actually, even if you've been traditionally talking to an opted-in audience using your blast texting, we have found that it's more efficient to do peer-to-peer because people respond more to other human beings than to a generic message that says, you know, crisis, crisis, you know, call your senator. That's not the same as, hey, John, could you please call your senator with this message and let me know what they say? And then you make the call. There was one text message interaction I remember from a special election we did up in New York earlier where an agent used Rumble up to text someone, encouraging them to go vote. And the person responded in frustration that they tried to go vote, but there wasn't any parking and they gave up. And the agent replied and said, I'm really sorry to hear that. Thank you so much for trying. And the person texted them back 30 minutes later, said, you know what? I thought about it and I decided to go back and I found a parking spot and I went and I voted. And I really feel much better. Thanks for the encouragement. That is a perfect example of what we're trying to do and why it's successful.
Interesting.
One thing I forgot to mention on the really cool kind of new things that we're doing is using text to donate. And there's people have, for instance, like with Red Cross disasters, et cetera, they've, you know, gone through campaigns where they'll like tack on $10 to their credit card bill and it helps the charitable organization. Actually, what we've discovered is that the processors in those cases take a huge amount of the fees. Between 30 and 40%. And so only $5 or $6 actually ends up going to the organization. And so one of the things that we're using is allowing peer-to-peer to reach out to people and allow them to either go to a mobile-friendly donation website, or if your organization already has their credit card on file, that person can just respond with the amount they'd like to donate and the word yes, and then we can send them a receipt by email. And so that is the most efficient and quick way that we've found to raise money for campaigns. And that's just another reason why peer-to-peer text is going to be incredibly influential in 2018 and beyond.
Right. Good ROI. So we had a Democratic strategist, Matt Compton, from Blue State Digital on the show a few weeks back. We were talking about email programs. And when I was asking him, you know, what is the benefit of email? He was saying, well, you can craft really long-form content. You can make long arguments to your supporters in ways that social media messaging doesn't facilitate. So I want to ask you about that trade-off, because text messages are kind of the exact opposite, right? They're super short. So can you discuss a bit of that trade-off between having a kind of short, condensed message versus something like email that's more long-form?
He's absolutely right. There is a trade-off in that, you know, in text messaging, you don't have the ability normally to like fill someone's inbox with a long form text, nor should you, because that's not what texting is. But you can have long conversations and you can respond dynamically to what the person replies. And that all makes it much more interactive than email. And the other problem is simply that email is completely inundated. The average person receives, I think, over 1,500 emails a month, but only 120 text messages. And so the problem with email is it's the wrong inbox. The other problem with email is that it's not coming from a person typically, it's coming from an organization. And if you've ever tried replying to a fundraising email from the Republican or Democrat party, there isn't someone on the other end typically being like, thank you very much. Like, I really read your response. In text, in peer-to-peer text messaging, there is.
Yeah, and this is all super cool. I'm really interested in this idea of texting, again, because it's kind of an old technology that's, you know, really hot this election cycle. But I want to stick with some of the things that I thought was really interesting reading your Medium piece. And one was that, like with email, RumbleUp offers the ability to do A-B testing. And so I was curious, how do you do A-B testing in the context of text messaging?
So this is, again, an example of where building on top of our YouCampaign platform is extremely helpful. We recommend, let's say a campaign wants to send a message to 50,000 people. A best practice would be to take two groups of 2,500 people and test two messages. And because we provide live analytics, you can see based on those two groups which one took the action more. So if you have a URL in both of those tests and they're each going to a different page, you can measure and see exactly how many people like clicked through and first visited the page. And then maybe the action was asking them to donate or to RSVP to an event. And so doing little tests like that, you can quickly come up with what the better performing message is. And that's the one that you blast out to your full list. And this is something that, again, we're kind of inheriting this idea from email, but we're applying it to text messaging and seeing similarly good results. Testing works. It improves your overall outcomes.
Right. But something that I thought was, you know, even more interesting was that RumbleUp offers the possibility to do polling as well. And I mean, maybe that's feasible in email. I'm not sure. But that stuck out to me as super interesting. How do you do polling through blast text messages?
We can do it a couple different ways. We can, first of all, just send someone a text message that says, you know, we'd love for you to fill out this this poll or this survey. Please click on this link. And that's an individualized link for that person. So that means we don't have to ask them this huge battery of questions because we know based on their cell phone, which is a unique identifier, who they are. So we know kind of their voting history, their ethnicity, frankly, even their income level. And so you don't have to ask people a bunch of questions that you already think you know. You can just ask them to answer the kind of horse race questions of like, you know, who are you voting for? You know, is the country on the right or wrong track? How do you feel about this issue? And so that's very speedy. And we're saving pollsters a lot of money. The other problem with polling that a lot of people recognize from 2016 is that it's more and more difficult to get a representative sample. It takes over 200 live phone calls to get someone who's 21 to pick up the phone and fill out a whole survey for you. And that kind of person might not be representative of the average 21-year-old in that area. And so texting allows them to more quickly fill out enough surveys to provide a more accurate picture of what's happening. And so that's a big change that we're doing. We can also ask people to respond to questions directly via text message because part of our system enables the client to see all the messages that are outgoing and all the replies that are incoming from that dashboard. So if they ask questions like, you know, of these four candidates, which one are you planning on voting for? And everyone's 1, 2, 3, 4, we can just quickly collate all that data and they've done a survey just using text.
Got it. So I mean, there's a lot more ways than I thought of that you could use text. And just looking at your website, I wanted to pick apart some of these case studies that you write about. And one of the successful case studies you highlight is that of Tracy West, who won a runoff primary election for the Alabama School Board, which, you know, that was for the primary. And so it doesn't seem to me to be one of these campaigns that would get so much national attention, right? So I'm wondering how you see this P2P texting being used in local versus national elections. Might it be, or my assumption is that it could be more impactful for mobilizing at the local level because turnout is typically lower.
Yes, I think there's a lot of strength at the local level, especially because like all politics is local and this is personal. And so you tend to pay more attention to someone who lives in your same city about a city issue than you would some national organization that's coming in and saying, here's how your city should make a decision. So I agree with you about the sort of grassroots community organizing efficiency of peer-to-peer. But at every level, even on the national level, peer-to-peer texting is going to be used extensively and at scale, because it looks like, in general, provides about a 1-3% lift. And in all of these close elections, not just local ones, I mean, in Ohio 12 recently, that was an election decided by a few thousand votes. People win and lose elections based on a few thousand votes. And even national elections like 2016, you know, states like Michigan and Wisconsin were decided by a swing of less than 16,000 votes. So peer-to-peer texting in all those states could have made the difference. So that's why it's going to get used.
Yeah. And then there was another example kind of scaling up, which was using Rumble Up to encourage Americans to call their representatives to support Donald Trump's nominee for the Supreme Court, Brett Kavanaugh. You wrote on the website that a pre-screened list of users were first contacted based on third-party data, which I think is interesting because it shows how this technology can be used within the larger kind of data ecosystem. Can you describe that process and where texting fits into the overall campaign strategy?
Sure. So obviously on a Supreme Court nomination, there's a lot of individual interest groups that care a lot about a certain issue and if that, you know, getting someone through who they think will be favorable to them on that issue. So for instance, on the pro-life or pro-abortion issue, we can go and pull a set of data of people that these organizations, these data companies have modeled to be strongly pro-life. And so when we're texting with them and asking if they support the president's nominee, we're kind of already going to the right audience. Mm. And so we're getting much better results. And the way that we pre-screen is we say, first of all, do you support the president's nominee? And if they say yes, we connect them to their senator. And if they say no, or they haven't decided, we don't. Because again, we want people who are on the side of our client in that situation to be the ones calling in. And that way you don't accidentally turn out the other side. And this can be a real problem. In 2016, it's not talked about very often, but the Democrats had a lot of issues with their household targeting. So they were often sending people to knock on doors that they thought were registered Democrats, asking them to come out and vote. But they were mistaken. They were independents or Republicans. And now that can actually have a boomerang effect, where now someone's more likely to come out and vote because they realize the other side is like active and like doing things, and now they want to get involved as well. So, you know, analytics and focus and targeting and data, they make such a huge difference. And then the last part that we deliver is the messenger, and then the fact the message is going to be seen.
Yeah. And I have two last questions for you. And one has to do with all of this kind of recent controversy around social media, you know, Cambridge Analytica, et cetera. I think one of the really interesting things about your company is you're building these platforms that can integrate with social media, but they can be kind of standalone, both the app and the text messaging service. So I guess I wanted to get your general take on the use of social media in the upcoming midterms. I mean, do you think that campaigns, you know, both Republicans and Democrats are turning away from those kind of traditional outreach measures like Facebook and Twitter and trying to craft new ways, because it seems that the public is kind of more skeptical of politics on these platforms?
You're absolutely right. They are more skeptical. Frankly, it's a mess. I think the way that the big social media platforms are handling the widespread discontent on both sides hasn't really satisfied either side's complaints. And so because there are fewer eyeballs on these social media platforms, there are more and more organizations, political organizations, that are looking for alternatives. And the way I talk about it is the real social network is in our phone. It's the address book of phone numbers and emails of our actual friends, family, colleagues, coworkers, and we communicate using those methods. That's our actual social network. Even though we have a wider, you know, social network on Facebook and Twitter, but they are now clamping down, you know, with disclaimers, et cetera, making it more difficult to reach audiences. And so it's just simply not as good a deal as when I was helping organizations 8 years ago, you know, getting campaigns onto social media. And so as far as like some of the next steps that we're taking, it's to continue to enable people to communicate political messages in a channel agnostic way. It used to be that, well, if you want to get a message out quickly, of course, you'd go to social media, Facebook and Twitter, et cetera, Google. That's become a lot more cumbersome. And with the disclaimer laws, et cetera, the process, et cetera, it's just less and less return on value. Meanwhile, you can get to people immediately through text messaging. So it's just a really clear alternative, I think.
Yeah. And I mean, I think you kind of precipitated my last question, which was about next steps for the platform and next steps for the company. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
Well, just that technology is always changing. If there's one thing that I totally take as gospel, is that no election can be run the way you ran the last one. And so 2018 will look different than 2016. The issues will be different. The tools will be different. And 2020 will be different as well. And that's accelerating in part because of the accelerating rate of technology. Just to give one example, rich text is on the way. And this will basically mean that our text messages will have the ability to operate more like a mini web browser. And so you could send someone a text message that within it includes a form they can fill out and enter information, and that all happens via text. And so text is going to get more powerful. And that is another reason why we feel like we're in a very good space in the peer-to-peer zone, but also that we can never stop and we always have to keep innovating, because when rich text hits, there's going to be a whole other set of use cases. And the carriers themselves, you know, AT&T, Mobile, Sprint, et cetera, Verizon, are all making, they all know this is happening. And they're making choices as well about how they regulate it. And so we're looking for basically more cooperation between carriers, regulators, and political organizations so that we all abide by best practices. Because we do think this is here to stay, but just like email, eventually we had to create CAN, spam, et cetera. There's going to be changes that need to be made to finally tune it. And so it's just a really exciting time to be alive.
Yeah, I can validate that from the studying it as an academic. But Thomas, thank you so much for your time. This has been super interesting.
Thanks, Michael. Always a pleasure.
I've just been speaking with Thomas Peters, founder and CEO of YouCampaign and Rumble Up. If your interest was piqued by this interview, make sure to read that Medium post that's in the show notes for some more use cases and hard numbers about how effective this technology can be. And that'll do it for this episode of the Social Media and Politics Podcast. Thank you again for tuning in, and I hope you enjoyed the show. Swing by our website, socialmediapolitics.org, and sign up for the newsletter if you want to see who's coming up next on the show. But until next time, I'm your host, Michael Becetta, signing off from Copenhagen. See you next time.